Best-selling author and American psychologist Mary Pfeiffer said this, "We live in a world filled with language. Language imparts identity, meaning, and perspective to our human community. Writers are either polluters or part of the cleanup team. Just as the language of power and greed has the potential to destroy us, the language of reason and empathy has the power to save us. Writers can inspire a kinder, fairer, more beautiful world, or invite selfishness, stereotyping, and violence. Writers can unite people or divide them." In this Book Show podcast, host, confidence coach Susan Axelrod asks women authors a simple question: which kind of writer are you? She invites each guest to step into the confidence zone to proclaim how her book can inspire. If you are seeking inspiration to create your legacy, take out your pen and pad. Your book, My Time, starts now. Hello, friends. I have my pen and pad with me for this part two conversation with Amy Conway Hatcher. I had such a fantastic conversation on the very day of Amy's book launch, which is Infinitely More: Choosing Freedom, A Career Mom's Turning Point. If you follow me, you know that I go in and I go deep. My work is one-to-one. My work is to give people a safe space to speak intimately and vulnerably, which is so often lacking. And as I learned from Amy and her book, especially in Big Law, Amy wrote a bit of a tell-all book, and she came on to this book show to talk about it. Today, we're going to be doing a deeper dive into the results of the book publication. Hello, Amy. Welcome back.
Hi, Susan. It's great to see you.
It's so good to see you. Now, I keep things real, Amy. So I'm going to say that I know it's been a lot for you since your book publication. Would that be fair to say?
It is. It's very fair to say. Who knew?
Well, I knew. I have published my own three books. I'm working on my fourth. I'm just working on the cover design right now. And my books are about soul connection. And so when you publish, when you write, when you go through the process of writing and publishing a book like Infinitely More, then there's so much energy there. And then once you let it out, for most human people, there's fear beyond which you can imagine. Did that happen to you?
Absolutely. I felt like the writing process was almost like The Exorcist. I mean, it's bringing up all of these emotions from over a period of time that you don't really talk about, that you don't share with friends, that sometimes you don't even appreciate. So there is this emotional release just from writing. But then when you're releasing it to the world and allowing people to judge you, it takes on a whole other flavor. So I often talk about the fact that I keep my paper bag handy and I'm still breathing through it, because the next phase is really about learning how to talk about it and being okay that the words on the page are there for everyone to read, to agree or disagree with, and even, in some cases, to judge.
Mm. You know, there's one truth that I've learned. It's very hard in this case because we need to acknowledge the transformation, the evolution of you from the young, ambitious woman into the law school and then the law career and into Big Law and then higher up the ranks. In our first episode, you talked about the men create a situation where women are fighting over one chair. And then you fight to get to that one chair. And you said, we need to think strategically about how we actually support each other. Maybe we boot that person out and then we have two chairs. And so the evolution of that person, of who you were and the working in that trench for a long time, and then the soul's yearning to move out to a different place. Does that feel like the journey a bit?
Yeah, it does. And it's strange because there's this, this you that's young and ambitious and totally idealistic about what's possible, what could be achieved. And you really don't see barriers there when you're younger and you sort of think you can do anything. When life moves on and you continue on in your career climb, and especially when you become a parent or you have other things in your life, perhaps, you're an important aunt, or you just have other young people in your life, it gets a little bit more complicated. And there are other things that fuel your soul beyond just the drive to succeed in the way that you've defined defined success from when you were young. So it gets a little bit more complicated, a little bit grittier, and it requires you to, I think, dig quite a bit deeper in terms of what you want your path to be.
You know, I love the words fuel your soul. In some ways, the journey that I described of someone like you becoming, a partner in big law is, one of the things that happens is those layers, they call them the onion layers, those layers build up around your soul. Your soul gets pushed down because the ego takes over a bit, not per se just from arrogance, but I think you said it, the idealism, what it is that you want to accomplish, the ambition. And so then the soul gets pushed down. But as we mature into the more maturing years of our adult lives, then she's like, hey, hello, what about me? Remember me, right?
Absolutely. And the funny thing is, the way I describe it is I describe it as a warrior suit. And what it was for me were putting on layers to protect that young idealistic girl, but also to be the person that people expected me to be in whatever room I was in. So whether that meant it was an all-white male boardroom, an all-white male partner meeting, or where I was one of a few, or speaking with a witness who worked in a factory. So because I did corporate investigation. So I think, and actually I'm gonna also add, which is really important, the mom club, right? What you have to do to fit in with moms and work through feelings that women have about the different choices that they've made and sort of the pressure they put on each other. And then, as you point out, sort of our strategy in the workplace where women are fighting over one chair because that's what the guys say we can have, instead of strategically thinking about how we get two, three, or four, not because we're going to shove somebody out who should be there, but because we're capable and it's important for us to have a voice at the table equally.
Amy, I went to a women's college, Mount Holyoke College, in the early 80s. And at that time, we were just coming past the prior decades where we were that generation where we thought we could have it all. And my mother also went to the same college, graduated in the class of 56. Her life was very different when she, graduated and ended up getting married within 1 year and staying at home. But I'm listening to you in this year, in this day and age, and you said on the other side, the personal side, the mom side, how do you fit in? And that struggle, the suit versus the mom jeans. And it's extraordinary that we're still here today. And so that's one of the reasons that I created this book show, was to give someone like you a platform and a voice and space to be able to safely speak about these things to support countless others, maybe like you 10 years ago. I'm not sure of your timeline, but where you had that idea of, oh, I'm not sure this is the right place to continue, your soul is yearning, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm glad that with all the sources of support and resources, you were able to find that voice and voice it out in your book.
I am too. I think it took a lot. I think there were a lot of years that the universe was sort of knocking on my door, raising flags about how life needed to change. And it really wasn't until the pandemic and I had a terrible shoulder surgery. I was working with my kids through some of their teens now. And so they're going through, you know, their own teen drama, working through some of the challenges that they were experiencing and giving them advice about how positive change can be and what, how important it is to stand up for yourself. And really at the end of the day, Susan, they turned the cards on me and asked me the very questions and, you know, gave me the very same advice that I was giving them. And they pointed out that I wasn't walking my talk. So part of leaving for me was, you know, I could not have gotten more signs that it was time to think of something else.
Right. You were shoved.
I was shoved.
Shoved. Yeah.
And rightfully so. I think if I had continued working at the pace that I was working under the conditions that I was working, that I would have been dead by 60. Mm-hmm. And that was the relentlessness, the, you know, sort of, and when you read the book, you'll see at some points I hear from people that it's almost breathless going through it. Like, when is this woman going to crack?
Mm.
And I think, you know, for a lot of women who are trying to do it all, have it all, be it all, meet everybody's expectations, you know, it's almost inevitable that at some point the brick wall is going to hit you. and that's, you know, certainly what it did for me.
Yeah, it sure did. I wrote an amazing book, the first book that I wrote, which has never gotten published for reasons I need to talk to my therapist about. But anyway, the very introduction, which I shared with so many women, spoke a little bit about my journey to an emotional meltdown, a near breakdown that I myself had in my late 30s. And I said, you know, one of the things I learned was that you can have it all, just not all now. And as in the Power Girl age of 6, 7, 8, you know, you can have it all then, right? That's the Power Girl age. But as you said, you know, you got more and more into the culture and the environment. And it almost, like, I felt it almost sapping the energy away from you to make you more robotic and ambitious to kind of just be in that place. Even if your kid was sick or crying or your husband was this or that or the other thing, you still had to kind of like go. And that's really where it sounds like, you know, at some point, you know, you said that the universe was knocking on my door for a long time, but eventually you got shoved. And so I want to ask you, what kind of feedback have you been getting from people? Has there been backlash? How are you feeling about all of this today, the book publication? What insights have women shared, et cetera?
So there, I've gotten a lot of feedback and really very positive feedback. Many, you know, many of the comments that I get obviously are from women who surprisingly are just like me. I think what's so extraordinary about my story is that it's so ordinary. And what I'm hearing and seeing from women who contact me, whether they're still in corporate America or have stepped out, is that we feel like we not only have to work hard, right, to play the game, but we've gotten into the habit of continually pushing ourselves to set the bar higher. So to do more, to prove we belong without the system evening out. And so the system sort of not delivering on its promise. And so when people say, you know, burnout, you can't have it all. It's about balancing work and life and momhood. And, you know, to a certain extent, that's true. But there's also this part of work that people don't understand. And I think this is also being talked about at home too, where disproportionately women have to work harder to keep everything going. And as we, you know, hit a pay gap, for example, a noticeable pay gap, the way that we're going to deal with that pay gap sometimes is to work even harder to prove that we've earned it, to prove that we should get what we've already earned. And there's a sense of we need to do more, more, more. And people get comfortable with the amount that we're delivering. And then the expectation is, unless she's being superwoman, that, you know, I mean, if she's not being superwoman anymore, or if she says, no, I'm going to draw this line, the question is, well, what happened to her? Why is she not being a team player? I mean, I do think it's unrealistic these levels that we've set for ourselves. And I don't think it's appreciated. It's almost like the frog in the pot. Everybody's gotten used to it and we keep doing it.
I want to encourage our listeners to listen to this conversation again. What you just said requires every, not just woman, but every person to put pen to paper, to write it down verbatim. This is one of those points that is tweetable, as they say. So we're talking about culture change, Amy, and you've been in the culture and, you know, having glanced through your book, I didn't read it word for word, cover to cover, but I skimmed, you know, all the way through to get the feeling and the flavor, because it was a lot for me because I wasn't in big law, but I had my own journey that I left an industry, an institution. Any woman can relate to it. So is one of your goals to change the culture there? Or what is it that as a result of your clearing process, that writing, you know, that writing process, I don't know, I was listening for it. I don't know that you would say it was healing. Later, I know you'll know it was healing, but not quite yet. But what would you want to see next? What is it? Let's talk about this.
So I think there has to be a massive culture shift within organizations for women to achieve equity in the workplace. I think it is, we're further behind than I thought. And it's not because of the statistics that I'm hearing, it's because of the feelings women have about their inability to speak up, to speak out, to talk about some of these harder issues. And also the feeling that they have to placate or hug or make men feel better about being part of the conversation. It's almost like the boogeyman. It's this taboo subject that nobody wants to talk about. And I'm finding that women are upset, even angry, regretful about their own choices, regretful that, you know, some of the men that they've sacrificed for haven't done their part or don't recognize that these issues are here. And so what I'm hearing from women is that they would love to have a platform, a place to go, a place to connect and talk about these issues on a more regular basis, to get advice, to get feedback, to feel heard, and frankly, to realize that they're not alone. That's been a recurring theme over and over and over again through these book launch conversations, that women want to find more ways to come together, to be able to share, understand, support each other. And to the extent that we can invite men to the conversation, without having to apologize, without having to cajole or take on the extra job of making them feel better about the system is the way it is, they'd love to start new conversations that are more in tune with reality and more in tune with not celebrating women for hanging in there and sticking it out, right? But how do we change it for our daughters? How do we change it for the next generation so they're not having to work as hard, face a burnout moment, and frankly, be in careers that aren't sustainable?
I mean, for me, I'm okay with them working hard. The real thing is underneath that, which is be in what I call a soul connected place while you're working hard, as opposed to all of these things. I think the ocean that you're talking about, the ocean that you're swimming in, they don't even know what they don't know, you know, in this case, referring to the men and or the women who also, you know, are in that culture because they haven't had the luxury of breakthrough or the privilege of, you know, having their eyes opened or something like that. It's hard to, you know, change an ocean, really. In my work, I mentioned it to you earlier when we were talking privately, my work is what I call intimate. So I know the beauty and the benefit and also the blessing, because you said to realize they're not alone. One of the things in group of bringing together small groups to have honest, deep conversation. And we know what Margaret Mead said about that. And so Is this something that you're interested in doing and offering?
Yes, it is something that I'm interested in doing, and I'm going to be extending it beyond just, you know, the working women. I mean, there are a contingent of us who are also talking about bringing our daughters into the conversation so that they can become more aware and stronger leaders and more supportive of each other at an even earlier age. I'm going to be posting more about this on LinkedIn, where I do a lot of my communication publicly through my daily posts. And then I'll also be putting some information out on my website. And I invite anybody who's interested in being part of this conversation or who has ideas and, you know, ways that we could create a platform for people to come together to get in touch with me through my website at amyconway-hatcher.com.
So that's H-A-T-C-H-E-R.
Correct.
amyconway-hatcher.com.
Yes.
Okay. So there's one thing about, I do quite a lot of this. I work with women in business like this. There's one thing that I do want to say that I've learned very distinctly. And that is that the lawyers will listen to a lawyer. And so instead of trying to do it all for everyone, because lawyers, if I tried to speak to them, you know, like at them about this, they'd be like, Susan, you have no idea what this is about. Now, I'm a soul coach and a, you know, intuitive business coach, so I can speak on certain levels. But the thing that I love about this, using your book as the tool, is that you would actually be able to create a group for other women who were basically you.
Yes, and what I'm finding that's so cool, Susan, is that there are people from other industries who have been very vocal, who have reached out extensively to me to say, you know, it's the same way in medicine. I'm a doctor. And I recently left because I had the very same problems in a parallel world. I heard from a woman in tech. I've heard from a woman in, you know, the media business. I mean, there are women across industries. And what I find fascinating is that there's some industries that are coming up with interesting solutions that other industries haven't caught on to. Some are I think all sorts of people are trying to come up with different ideas of how to make this work and how to continue the conversation in different ways so that we're not, I'm going to talk about this in the context of a mom, that we're not working in careers as if we don't have children or raising children as if we don't have careers.
Mm.
I think we have to realize that no matter what choices we make in whatever industry, we have to try to take advantage of the very best ideas that women and men can come up with and see what can apply and not think that one industry is going to, you know, lick the problem over another. Because I do think we are at a time where people are finally, or at least some people are finally willing to talk about it. So my goal is to get the very best ideas from anybody who's interested in the conversation and take it from there.
I want to make sure that I call out the part of your idea where you're involving our daughters. Everything I do in my life now, I have two adult daughters, amazing women, whom I love and adore. And everything I do now in my life is to be good, healthy, well-functioning, excellent, happy, soul connected, which isn't always happy, by the way, myself. So that I can be a good role model for them, and also so they can focus on themselves without being worried about me. And I commit to this, and I live this, and I do this every day with my mental health, my emotional health, my spiritual health, and my physical health. I love your idea of bringing daughters, maybe sons, if you're going to expand it, to the
table.
Well,
my son is part of the discussion and yeah. Always part of the discussion at home.
No.
In fact, I had a book launch party, a virtual book launch party where I think close to 100 people signed up. And Jack was the only man who showed up. He's 13.
Jack.
Exactly. Yeah. For a while. But he sat there and offered some of his thoughts on inclusivity. And it was really neat to see him speak in a public forum, be part of the conversation, and see what women are talking about in a way that it's not so scary. So it was fun. It was interesting. People embraced him for being there. And we absolutely bring him in too. I will say the other thing to plug the book, and what I hope people do is I hope you'll also donate to some of the nonprofits. All the book proceeds are going to nonprofits that champion women and girls and women and girl leadership of the future. That's also on my website. And I hope you'll consider, I hope folks will consider giving to those organizations as well.
Yeah, I love that right from the outset. I call this building philanthropy into the business model. Yeah. You know, a book today is a business, and you're in the business right now just of voice, of just speaking, and also of listening. And honestly, ideas come from some people speaking and some people listening. You know, sometimes in the ocean, you can't hear things because the roaring is so loud, right? But when we're in quiet, intimate spaces, people feel safe and free to speak and share. And they can see, you know, now it's online or either in person, they can see and people are listening. And that is one of the things that is so lost today. This is why I do intimate groups. So some people can speak and some people will listen. And that's the synergy that creates the type of outcomes that you're talking about. So there's so much here. I'm so glad that we had this follow-up conversation, especially because with this book show, I invite other authors to come and give voice to their message. And I especially invite listeners who are people like you, who were suffering, were struggling, or even are, to write. For me, writing has been healing. I write every day. I publish in magazines. I have books. I have more coming out of me. I speak to authors. Journaling has been one of my healing resources. And so there's other people who have books in them whom we want to encourage to go through that, to bravely and, you know, to take strength to go through that process of writing.
Yeah. And to your point, it doesn't have to be a book. It can be small. It can be an article. It can be a post. It can be journal writing that never sees the light of day. But starting to put your thoughts down to process what you've gone through, what you've experienced, and what you've learned. You know, we can't live in the past. We don't want to live in the past and we don't want to have regrets, but we have to almost acknowledge what's happened so that we can find pathways forward and live in a better future. Mm.
I want to remember to say, I wanted to just bring back, we just have a few more minutes, but the idea that you said before that you haven't just had responses from lawyers, but people, women in other industries. I want to speak to them also, women in tech or women in medicine. I became a trauma-informed professional coach through an organization, Lodestar, that Kimia Saraf started. She's a physician to coach other physicians. And as we talked about earlier before we started, high professionals, it's hard for them to receive help. It's hard for them to ask for help or to receive help. Mm-hmm. And some won't go into therapy. Sometimes coaching is a better modality. But definitely, I know these dynamics that we're talking about are absolutely true across many professions. And so we do want to encourage people to think, feel, I call it, quote, breathe, open, allow, and think. It's my boat meditation. And then you can write from there and feel safe about it and really have these conversations on your own. So again, Amy, it sounds to me like before we started, I said, what's just the next thing you want to do? You said, I want to, you know, host a conversation. And so if anyone listening wants to be a part of this type of conversation with Amy, go to her website, amyconway-hatcher.com, and just connect with her there. Find her on LinkedIn. Amy, I want to say thank you so much, wishing you all the very best. And now what I'd like to do, maybe come back in 6 months, certainly in a year, and check in.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. All right. Thanks for all you do, Susan.
Yeah, absolutely. Take good care. And
you too.
I'll look forward to seeing you soon.
Excellent. To much success.